Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI. This is the Smart Passive Income Podcast with Pat Flynn, session number 217. Lego.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And now your host, he always shares the second Twix bar, Pat Flynn.
Hey, and real quick, our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you haven't tried a sit/stand desk before, this offer from Uplift is the perfect opportunity. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. A desk should fit the user, right? Which is exactly why Uplift Desk has a ton of customization options. They're stable, the materials are solid. I mean, just the choices of material alone are incredible, all the way from laminate to eco to bamboo and even solid wood. The option to stand while working is just healthier, better circulation, better movement, which helps to reduce all kinds of different health risks and repetitive strains. And over 1 million customers have chosen Uplift Desk for their innovative designs, direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping. They can even give you free accessories with every desk. Uplift is a great deal, and they're built to last and include an industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that as well. So go to upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's upliftdesk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. Hey, what's up, everybody? Pat Flynn here. Thank you so much for joining me again today in another episode of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. I'm really excited because today I'm interviewing somebody, a co-founder of a company called BrickBook, which I'm really excited about. You know, I have a six-year-old son. He's totally into Legos, and this is a great idea. This Lego-compatible MacBook case was Vanity Fair's ultimate gift of 2015, was mentioned as one of Oprah's favorite things, which, as you probably know, is a huge deal. And we're going to talk about all about the growth and the origin story of BrickBook and how Brett Miller, who we're speaking with today, quit his well-paying six-figure job to really go full-time with this, and how the company's been able to kind of expand horizontally out of just building BrickBooks and Lego-compatible MacBook cases. If you check it out at BrickBook.com, that's B-R-I-K, that's brick without the C, book.com. You'll see what this looks like, and you'll see just how great of an idea this is. So without further ado, here's Brett Miller, again from BrickBook.com. Here we go. Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm so happy to welcome Brett Miller on the show today, who is doing some awesome stuff. He ran a very successful Kickstarter campaign, doing some really cool things. He's going to reveal a lot about this entire process that he's gone through. But first of all, Brett, just thank you for coming on the show. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Pat. It's great to be here.
So you sent me an email, which is really what prompted me to reach out to you and schedule this interview. The subject line for the email was, I quit my 100,000K, or not 100,000K, that would be a lot of money, 100K job to build Legos. Thanks. So there's a lot in that already. You know, you quit your high-paying job, and now you're building Legos. I think people want to know what the heck happened and how did this all start. So why don't I'll just let you kind of take us through that journey.
So we launched the Kickstarter campaign last year, and it was sort of prompted by my co-creator and his girlfriend had just gotten done doing this Lego design, and then they were watching some TV and playing on their MacBooks. And the idea was sort of, if you see that design, like, I'm the only one who's really going to see that, but what if you could take those designs, especially the flatter designs, and put them on the back of a MacBook, and that way, everyone, every time you go to a coffee shop, the office, anywhere that thing's open, it's basically this blank canvas waiting for things to be created and inspiring people. So we took a base plate and we went to a local place to get it cut around and made a prototype. And then I took it home for Christmas last year and I was getting comments like crazy. You take it through airport security. People are like, is that a Lego MacBook case? Where'd you get that?
Yeah.
So we knew we were onto something. And then when I came back, we put a video together, and did some research on Kickstarter campaigns. And our goal was if we could sell $30,000 worth of these things on Kickstarter within 30 days, it would help us pay for the molds to actually get them built, and it would validate the idea. So we ended up hitting that goal in about 6 days.
Wow.
And then by the end of the 30 days, we'd sold around $92,000 worth of brick books.
That's awesome. Were you always kind of an entrepreneur at heart and wanted to do stuff like this before?
Yeah, absolutely. So the guy that I'm co-founded BrickBook with, we actually had a few startups in the past, and then after we sold the last one, he went to go work for Facebook, and I went to work for a business information company because we needed more experience at sort of that mid to large growth stage, and we didn't have an idea at the time that we were super passionate about. And all the entrepreneurs out here, I'm sure you know this, you go through such an emotional roller coaster during the whole process that if you're not 100% head over heels in love with your idea, you're going to fizzle out. And Pat, one of the things you mentioned in your book, by the way, if the book was around when we launched this Kickstarter campaign, we would have saved a ton of money because there are so many things packed in that book that are mistakes that we made during this process that we would not have made if it would have been around. So thank you for writing that too, by the way.
Thank you for that. I want to dive into what some of those things were, but keep going.
Yeah, and you have to be really, really passionate about it. And if not, it's going to fizzle. And one of the things that you mentioned in that book is every time that you try to do a project just for money, it sort of fizzled and it didn't work. And we had gone through that before. We'd done these projects where we identify a great opportunity for a business, but we weren't passionate about those businesses. And so anyway, when we'd launched this Kickstarter campaign and we hit that goal, first of all, like, the marketing and getting to that point in Kickstarter was the easiest part about this process. Because once you get into hardware and you have to learn about manufacturing and importing goods and shipping and logistics and fulfillment, that's where the real issues started that we had to kind of work through.
Okay. You know, I actually do talk about Kickstarter in my book, and I actually talk about how it's not actually a good idea to validate your ideas by using a Kickstarter campaign because of some of those things like you mentioned, because there's fulfillment, and if you're just wanting to know if somebody's going to pay for this thing that you have, there's some work that needs to be done before you actually end up getting crowdfunded. So when going back to the initial idea was there, and was there anything done to actually validate this idea instead of just, hey, people thought it was cool and then you went forward with it? Was there anything in between there that you did to kind of make sure that this is something that people really, really wanted?
So that was the tricky part, because when we first when we first like talked about the idea, before we even had a prototype, people are just kind of like, you know, that sounds good, fine, do whatever you want. You know, it didn't get a lot of enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Then when we had the prototype, people were like, oh, that's kind of cool. You think people are really going to want to, you know, build bricks on the back of their MacBook? And I was like, well, I do. And, you know, the riches are in the niches, as Pat Flynn says. And we knew that, like, there had to be more people out there like us. So then we did the Kickstarter video, and it was actually funny because we were driving down to the warehouse on the way to Coachella a few weekends ago and listening to the audiobook, and you talked about how you know, the Kickstarter page takes a lot of work, and the video, you know, is not something you can just do overnight. And my co-founder and I were laughing because that was like the one thing that we actually did do in one night, because I had I have a background in digital film and video production. So for most of the time, I 100% agree. And the next campaign we're doing, the video and the page and all that stuff is going to take us weeks to put together. But we were in a rush for that one and wanted to get something out.
Why do you think this campaign went 3x over the amount of money that you wanted? Why did you think it was so successful? In kind of a second question to that is, well, when somebody goes on Kickstarter, I think there's a lot of people who know what Kickstarter is and what it could do for you. What are some things to look out for when you are creating your campaign, and what worked for you guys that could work for others too?
So press is always a big part of that, especially like getting that rolling thunder at the very beginning. A lot of people do sort of that spray and pray method where they'll go and buy a press list and then they'll just blast an email out to 100 people or hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. But what I did is I actually went, and you talk about this a little bit in the book too, but I actually went to some of the major tech blogs, Gizmodo, Wired, Engadget, and I found contributors or journalists on those blogs that write about either, you know, toys or Lego or something related to the campaign I was running. Mm-hmm. And then once you find their name, you just do some digging and stuff on Google to get their email address. And then I sent out maybe only like 6 or 8 emails, and I got responses from 6 of them, and
wow.
4 of them ended up, and 4 of them ended up writing articles about us, including Gizmodo, and we were on the homepage of Wired as well.
And to think, what would have happened if you just didn't send those emails?
Yeah, it would have just probably just like fizzled around, you know? You have to just keep pushing at it. And another thing that helped us a lot, and this is one of the big testaments to Kickstarter, it has its flaws, which I'll talk about, but is the marketing they do for you. So about 30 to 40% of our total backers came from Kickstarter itself. So they do a really good job at promoting you to their existing audience. Mm-hmm. And if anyone out there does a Kickstarter campaign, make sure to email them and ask them about becoming a staff pick. Because we were a Kickstarter staff pick, but that's because we reached out to them and asked them. It's amazing how much you can get in this world if you just aren't afraid to ask for things.
Yeah, it seems like this is a common theme here. Going back to those articles with Gizmodo and those other places, Wired, what did you say in those emails? Did you just, like, what was the content in those emails?
Yeah, so I believe the subject line was something, let's say the author's name was John Doe, and I would write, John Doe fan launches Lego compatible MacBook or something like that. So try to hit on the things you know are going to interest them, but also personalize it. And at the beginning of the email, I always mentioned a previous article they've written about. Mm-hmm. Because I think that really helps sort of immediately dismiss that it could be this mass email that you sent to 300 or 400 people.
Right, right.
And one thing that helps too is journalists really, really pay attention to their comments, even massive journalists on their blogs. And if you spend some time before you send them an email and write them some comments and just make it so your name's going to be recognizable when you send that, I think that really helps too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's sort of relationship building 101, right? All the way back to Dale Carnegie, how to win friends and influence people. You know, talking about getting personal with people, talking about that, you know, calling them by name is actually a whole chapter in that book. And so I think putting those principles into play here is actually obviously working out very well for you. And then kind of incredible that all you have to do is ask Kickstarter and they just got you to become a staff pick. And I'm sure, you know, it also helps that you have a great product and it's something that they just wouldn't give staff pick to everybody, but it kind of just prompted them to check you out and actually give that to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And the thing is, like, with the product, we have this advantage that we get to kind of tap into nostalgia. There's this poster that we have that we sort of reference every time we're making decisions on product. And it's a George Bernard Shaw quote, and it says that we don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing. And that's sort of like the mantra of the company is, like, how can we build products that make it not only socially acceptable but cool for adults to sort of express their inner child?
I like that. And you said products. So does that mean there are other products in the works for things that are of that mission?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a new Kickstarter product that's going to be coming out in about 2 months. But recently, one of the things we realized was our BrickBook customers really wanted to design their own sort of pixel art. And right now, if they want to go, it's completely Lego compatible. But if they want to go get like those flat 1x1 bricks that you can put on the back of it that they won't, you know, fall off when you put them in your bag and you can take it around with you. Mm-hmm. Those are really, really difficult to find. So we sent an email out to our backers, and this is another tool. Once you have those email addresses from your Kickstarter campaign, get MailChimp, get SendGrid, get something and use them, because they're already supporters. They want, you know, they want to give their opinion. And we did a poll and found out that about 85% of our backers after we launched changed their design up every month. And so we started to do, it was pretty eye-opening for us. And so we started to sell these design kits where we would say, okay, here's 12 different designs, and it includes little instruction manual and all the bricks you need to recreate this design. The thought was that adults are busy and they don't want to have to go research and find these designs. They just want to be kind of told what to do. Very similar to like a Lego kit in that sense. Mm-hmm. After we sent that email, we sold over $1,000 worth of those things in a couple hours. So we knew that we were going to need to build up that side of the business as well.
Yeah, I'm here on your website, and there are these design kits that are, and you can even buy individual bricks or extra bricks if you wanted to. But I think these design kits are actually really smart, and there's all these ones that are designed also by, it looks like you have your own community members designing some too, right?
Yeah, so one of the things we discovered is after we started selling the design kits, we were getting a lot of support emails saying, where can I get more bricks? I want to do my own designs. And so we started selling just the individual colored bricks. And now those account for about 30% of our total revenue. We have a hard time keeping them in stock. They've been massively successful.
Wow.
And Pat, if you go to brickbuild.com without the C in brick, mm-hmm. you'll notice we actually put a builder together too. And it's very similar to like Microsoft Paint, where you can click on a brick color and select your, you know, MacBook size, design your own, and then it calculates how many bricks you'll need, and you can automatically add those to your cart.
What? That's pretty awesome. Where is that website again? How do you spell that?
It's brickbuild.com, BrickBuild.com.
Got it. Okay, awesome. So it's a little grid here. I can pick colors and actually just create my own design. And then when I check out, you're going to give me those exact pixel color ones and everything I need to make this design, yes?
Correct, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Okay, so one big question that comes to mind here is that, I mean, in terms of the, you know, the fact that it's a physical product, you have stuff to move and inventory and whatnot. Like, how, walk us through what that's like, because you even said earlier that, you know, the marketing and that, the Kickstarter stuff, that was sort of easy compared to this world of product manufacturing and dealing with fulfillment in this sense. Can you give us a rundown of sort of what that's like, how you got to know everything you needed to know in order to do this?
Yeah, sure. Trial and error was most of it, but there's a few parts where we really lucked out. A good friend of mine, his boss had a warehouse in California, which is about a 6-hour drive from where we're based up in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But we offered to, you know, do some help for them and help marketing on their side. And then in exchange, we could, you know, use some of the warehouse space. If that's not available and no one in your network has that space for you, there's a lot of different opportunities for like fulfillment centers that you can just have everything shipped to them, and then they can kind of do these one-offs. Mm-hmm. But before we even had to deal with the warehouse, we had to find a manufacturer in China. And one really good way to do that is, you know, go check out a bunch of different Kickstarter campaigns. A lot of Kickstarter creators are really responsive and will get back to you if you have questions about Kickstarter. And I'm happy to give, you know, my email address at the end of this too. And if you guys have questions, I can fill those for you, no problem. But anyway, so we were able to find a manufacturer, and I remember Amazon for their AWS conference, they were actually one of our Kickstarter backers. And we needed to produce 40 or 50 cases for them with the AWS logo before the conference. Well, one piece of advice I have is double everything. Double your estimated time, especially if it's your first time doing a Kickstarter project, how long it's going to take, and, you know, double what your expenses are going to be. Because if we did not raise triple what we, you know, aimed for, then we would have been in pretty bad trouble, because we actually went over budget on that too. Hmm. The molds are incredibly expensive, and one of the things we didn't do was ship. We had them made in China, but we didn't ship MacBooks over there initially, so they could do all the testing there. So what was happening is they were building them there, and then they would ship us the cases, and then we would have to see if they fit or didn't fit. And that shipping back and forth and the time we were losing during that process was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
We didn't have the cases. The cases didn't fit the first time, and those molds are anywhere between $5,000 to $15,000 a piece, and we were doing 4 models. So we had to have them redone, which was incredibly expensive. So make sure when you're dealing with your manufacturer that you get prototypes done first, because apparently you can do that before they actually do the tooling on the steel, which is where it gets really, really expensive. So Amazon had this order for us. They shipped these cases to us right before the conference. We unbox them. We're so excited. We're at the, you know, top of the roller coaster at this point. And then we go to put bricks on the back of them, and they just fall right off.
Uh-oh.
And we were like, oh crap. We have 4 days before this conference. Luckily, the people at Amazon were super cool. So what we ended up doing is going and getting a huge tub of glue, and we spent the entire weekend individually gluing on bricks.
Oh my gosh. Are you serious?
14,000 bricks or something like that, just so we could have them for the conference. And then, so you could still get the logo. Luckily, they still fit on the back of the MacBooks, but the studs weren't right. And then we just put a coupon in there. So they said, you know, we'll ship you a new one when the new ones are ready, and gave them a promo code. And that's kind of how we handled that. But it was pretty intense.
That's crazy. That sounds insane. But also kind of cool, because I mean, this is real life stuff, you know, and stuff like that happens all the time. And obviously you guys have bounced back from that and are doing really well. Can you give us an idea on numbers and how you guys have grown over time, and what is really attributed to more the most recent growth after the life of Kickstarter?
Sure. One of the things too, when you start to handle support, Kickstarter will, they will sort of like, you get your money, it's dumped into your account, and they're kind of done with you. There's a software application we use called ShipStation. Mm-hmm. after the campaign's over, that also would have saved us so many headaches than trying to do this in like a spreadsheet, because you could import all of it, and then anytime someone has an order adjustment, they change their address because you're delayed, your manufacturing, you can handle it all in there. So when it comes time to ship, you just click go, it prints off all your labels, and you're done. So ShipStation, definitely got to give them a plug, because they have been awesome for us. Yeah, and so post the campaign, it took us, the campaign finished almost, it was a year ago yesterday, and then we started shipping in December. We have, since I went full time, we have doubled our sales every month, the past few months.
Wow.
And part of what's contributed to that is we continue to get really good press. We were featured as one of Oprah's favorite things in her magazine this month, and we're starting to do deals with retail too. So some of them you've heard of, I probably can't mention them on the show, but you'll see BrickBook popping up in more places that you normally shop in the near future, and that of course helps with the sales too.
Yeah.
I would recommend trying to build up your direct business as much as possible, though, because every time you go to work with retailers, they're great, but they cut into that margin, and you lose a lot of flexibility in what you can do as far as like pricing and promotions go.
Hmm. Man, that's insane. So it continues to get press, it continues to grow. And what do you attribute to that? I mean, is it just the fact that it's just one of those great products that people tend to see and then share with their friends and things like that?
Yeah, the word of mouth is about, I think, about 30% of our business right now. But I remember once I was walking, there's a Walt Disney Museum up in San Francisco, and I was walking through it, and there was a video clip of Walt, and he was talking about there's one thing that all adults have in common, and that's that we were all once kids. And if you can kind of tap into that nostalgia and tap into that love of like building and creativity, I think it gets people talking about it. And that's really, really helped us. But we also have a pretty aggressive advertising and SEO strategy that we're putting into place too. Because the thing with press is it's great for these spikes, but it wears off, right? And you have to have something that's a little bit more sustainable in place afterwards to keep people coming to the site, even if word of mouth is strong.
So what are you doing for advertisements right now?
We're working on ads on Facebook. The cool thing about BrickBook is you can customize it to any target. So if you're a Golden State Warriors fan, you can do a Golden State Warriors BrickBook design, and then you can target it to Golden State Warriors fans. And as we continue to grow, we'll have to really be careful about licensing issues and things, I'm sure. A lot of the designs on the site right now are submitted by the community, and then the community goes in and finds them and purchases the bricks. And we're just trying to find our niche there a little bit.
Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about that, the licensing thing? That was something I wanted to bring up, and that is the fact that you're using Lego stuff as a product. How does that play a role in your business? And also, I wanted to just know about that first.
Sure. That's probably one of our top FAQs there. Lego, the utility patents for that sort of stud interlocking system expired in the late 80s, which is why you started to see all of the Mega Bloks and Creo and all those hit the market. We try really hard to stay away from looking like we're trying to be Lego, though. You know, and they've done such a great job. First of all, we love Lego. We think their brand's awesome. The company has done a remarkable job turning itself around. Like, we are huge fans. And we don't use minifigures because they still have, you know, patents on their minifigures. We don't try to position our product to look like a Lego official product, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, I don't see any sort of nothing on the website beyond the brick itself screams Lego at me at all. I mean, the coloring, the logo that you guys have, it's completely different. Was that something that was kind of scary at first? I think that's something that, you know, would make people scared to kind of go down this route.
Yeah, it was sort of, you know, always on the back of your mind. I mean, I've been involved before with like a previous company with litigation, and it's one of those things. It was one of those experiences that was horrible, and you like lose sleep, but you realize that even if you're right, whoever has the most money for attorneys most of the time is going to win.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. And so the thing was, we did a lot of research into the patents, and into some of like lawsuits that LEGO's initiated against some other companies before, and they had to do with like the minifigures and stuff. So we stayed away from that. Read a few books and did our best. And then at some point, it's sort of like, you know, leaving your job to do your own thing. At some point, you just have to kind of like take that leap and pray and cross your fingers and keep pushing forward and not be, you know, have that on the back of your mind all the time, or it's really going to be a distraction.
Right. And it seems like with a year into this now, with Oprah checking it out and on all the press that you've gotten, that, you know, if something was up, they probably would have told you by now.
Yeah. I mean, I would hope so. But yeah, you know, you never know. We're just going to keep doing our thing and hope for the best. I mean, the way I kind of see it is we're selling a lot of Legos too, because we have this, you know, base plate on the back of a MacBook now, and people can go use their existing Legos. Part of the reason we didn't go with our own proprietary brick sizes or locking system was because, you know, if you're going to build like a new car, a new, you know, gasoline car, you're not going to make it take orange juice or something strange, right? You're going to make it compatible with the fueling stations out there. In the same way, like if we're going to put this case out there, we would love it if you have a huge box of bricks at home that you already can use on it. You don't have to go out and buy a bunch from us, but if you'd like to, you know, we'll provide them too.
Yeah, that's cool. You had mentioned earlier that Kickstarter, which again was the platform that you launched on, had some flaws. Can you talk a little bit about what those flaws were, what people could and should look out for if they're going to get on that platform?
Yeah, sure. So the first one is definitely get the support in order, as far as like have a system in the back end, because people are going to move, I guarantee it. People are going to want to change, realize they have like, if you offer multiple products, they'll want a different color and they'll change their mind and you'll need to support it. So don't put it in a Google spreadsheet. Find a good piece of software to import it and do it correctly at the beginning, and you'll save yourself a lot of hassle later on. Mm-hmm. The other thing is shipping. So we offered international and domestic shipping. I recommend offering international if you can, because it was about 50% of our orders came internationally. Mm-hmm. But we were using USPS, the United States Postal Service, for our international orders because they're the least expensive. I would highly recommend anyone who's doing international shipping get a contract with DHL up front. It's going to be a little bit more expensive, but you are going to save yourself so much time and aggravation from people's packages not arriving, people's packages arriving 60 days or longer after you ship it, and then you've reshipped another one. And it's just a much, much better experience. So that's something we only did about 3 weeks ago, and it's something I wish we would have done from the beginning.
It's crazy. I know, because I've tried to ship stuff internationally before, and it could just be it's sort of, you just hope for the best sometimes. So DHL would be the one to go to.
Yeah. USPS has been great. Domestically, they're fine. We also use, UPS, and they're fine, but don't use USPS and then try to get the cheapest option and expect it to end up in Taiwan next week, 'cause it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Can you go over some more numbers here in terms of, you know, costs, and you know, these are things that, you know, I think we should all know if we're going to get into product manufacturing, and you know, when you got this manufactured, are you working out a deal with those in China to get it at a certain price, or how does that all work? And then in terms of discovering what price you should be selling it at, like, how did you determine that?
That's a great question. So first in China, There's two costs, right? There's the cost of the tooling, which is getting that steel and the mold made, and then there's the cost per unit. Make sure to negotiate the cost per unit up front with the tooling, because it gets very easy to just be like, okay, well, we'll worry about that later. And you can often renegotiate after your first batch comes in because the tooling's already done, and then the cost per unit becomes a much more, you know, easy point. We've had a lot of warnings, and we love our manufacturer, but we've had a lot of warnings from other manufacturers that have taken the tooling and then sold the products, you know, on the Chinese market or elsewhere. And that can be a real threat. One of the great pieces of advice I've heard to sort of counteract that is make sure in the tooling itself, your logo or some sort of imprint is part of the product, like part of the tooling, and not just a sticker that goes on later. Because that way, if they want to use that same tooling, it'll have your indent, it'll have your mark on it, and they won't be able to claim that they didn't.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of cool.
How are you communicating with those overseas?
So I use Skype primarily. And if your product is something that's really sensitive, I would highly recommend going over to China and spending a couple weeks and working with them one-on-one. Luckily for us, we were able to just ship MacBooks and they could just click them on and do all that testing there. I still plan on going over there and meeting them because I think it's a great thing to do culturally too. But one of the things Tim Ferriss mentions in his book, and you've mentioned it several times, Pat, as an entrepreneur, finding ways to sort of outsource your work in the Philippines and in India and build real relationships with them has been a game changer in every business I've done since I've read that book. Mm-hmm. And it seems very difficult to do. Like you're thinking, oh my gosh, how am I gonna find someone over there? How are we gonna connect? Can I trust them? It just seems really, really challenging. But you can get a virtual assistant or support over there in a day, a few hours, and you will be so happy you did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Were there any challenges in communication besides just the fact that you're not there with them? I think is it a little weird that you're like here in the U.S. and it's just kind of happening on the other side of the world without you there kind of overseeing everything?
Yeah, it's the time zones can be really tricky. And that we ask for photos a lot. Every time there's like a new piece made, we ask for prototypes so we can test them. It's tough, but it's definitely worth it. It's much more economical. And once you have that rhythm and once you have that working relationship set up, it becomes much easier over time.
Were there any communication barriers in terms of language?
No. So our manufacturer, he speaks English, and it's pretty solid. We try to make sure that a lot of our communication actually happens through text. Mm-hmm. So we have reference on both ends, and that also helps to kind of clear up any loss in translation issues.
Okay, great. And then to continue that conversation about numbers really quick, outside of that realm of manufacturing, kind of inside it, I guess, but in terms of price per unit and then determining what your price is, what was that discussion like, and how does that, like, if you could share those numbers, that'd be great.
So I can give you a few numbers. We decided on our sort of cost on the site by looking at other cases and just trying to kind of gauge what people would be willing to pay for it. And then kind of worked backwards. I don't recommend doing it that way. It turned out okay for us just because our product's really, really simple. Mm-hmm. And we don't get many returns unless someone orders the wrong size. So that's been pretty helpful. I would say if you're looking for something around that size and without all of the packaging, just the cost per unit, you're going to be anywhere in the like $3 to $10 range, unless you're doing like Walmart size volume where you're ordering, you know, hundreds of thousands at a time, and then you can get those prices down a lot. One of the things that I think has helped us is we have really, really nice packaging. So it comes in sort of like an Apple-esque box, and you're feeling like you're really, really getting value from the product. We also pay a little bit more because we use really high quality plastics, and we have a pretty good like quality assurance process in China to make sure that everyone who gets a BrickBook is really satisfied with that experience.
Yeah.
And then the cost to run the business, I mean, right now because a lot of the, you know, marketing support help is done with a team in the Philippines, and I'm full time on it. It's costing us about maybe $1,500 a month to run the business.
Wow.
Which is really nothing. I mean, we have days already that we're seeing, you know, thousands of dollars a day, and it fluctuates. Some days, you know, it goes a little slower, and you're just like, "What's going on?" And you're like in panic mode, and then you realize it's just fine. It's just one of those days, and then it's really satisfying, though. Like anyone who's ever owned a Shopify store, and I recommend Shopify too. That's who we use for our e-commerce. Every time you get an order, you get one of these push notifications on your phone with the little Shopify logo, and they should run like psychology experiments on that, because when you see that, you get such like this dopamine kick.
Yeah.
So now I'm like in love with the Shopify logo. I want to like paint it on the side of my wall just because it makes me feel so good when
that's
I see
funny.
It.
That's so cool. That's awesome, man. That brings me to my last question here, which is about your transition from going from a full-time sort of 9-to-5-ish kind of job into what you do now. Like, what was that transition like for you? What was going through your head? Was it easy decision? Tell us about that experience for you, and just first of all, congratulations on making that leap.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. So when we launched, I was trying to do both for a long time. Like I said, I have a co-founder, and we would spend every night and every weekend working on this. And it became, by the time December rolled around, we were trying to get them out for Christmas, and we were dealing with all the support. I think it was probably the most stressful month I've ever had. And then in, let's see, it would have been March, it was finally to the point where something had to go. I couldn't continue doing both things. Mm-hmm. I already had very little social life left as it was. And when you're pulled between it, it's not even always about enough time in the day. It's about focus, right? And both the company I was working for and BrickBook were getting neglected in one way or another because you can only focus on one thing at once. Mm-hmm. So I had to make the decision, you know, is it time to go and work, focus on this full time? If I don't do it, am I missing this awesome opportunity to finally make that leap and build a business? Then that was that. So I didn't want to kick myself later for staying and watching BrickBook fizzle away because we didn't have someone that was, you know, living and breathing and sleeping BrickBook.
Man, what an incredible journey you've had. It's really, really encouraging to hear. And I think just because it's such a fun product, I think a lot of people are going to love it. So where can people go and check out BrickBook?
You can get a BrickBook at BrickBook.com. That's BrickBook.com. And I just threw up a promo code SPI. And
oh, awesome.
That'll get you 20% off your entire order until the end of May. Just because, you know, I think there's something about entrepreneurs is like this like high energy, child at heart thing. And we see that in our reviews sometimes. People come in and be like, I closed a sale because I put the customer's logo on the back of my BrickBook. Mm-hmm. Or I sparked up this conversation at a coffee shop. This guy ended up introducing me to this guy. And so I think it's just something that's contagious, right? Like creativity is contagious, and we just want to help people express themselves.
It's awesome. I love it. This episode will actually go live in June, so it'll be a June promo code if that's okay.
Yeah, no problem. Okay. I can address that.
Sweet. Man, thank you so much, Brett. Again, Brett Miller from BrickBook.com. And we look forward to hearing about your next ventures, and we'll definitely pay attention to what's going on in the upcoming months here.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks, Pat.
Take care. Thanks so much. All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Brett Miller. Again, you can find out more about him and his company at brickbook.com. And he also mentioned that special discount code for you there at the end there. And all that information will be available on the show notes as well, as always, at smartpassiveincome.com/session217. Again, that's smartpassiveincome.com/session217. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I look forward to serving you next week episode when we talk with somebody who I've become very familiar with. This is the founder of Teachable. And we're going to talk all about online courses, best practices, and really one of my favorite topics, which is how do you get your course members, your customers, to actually follow through on the content that you have so that they will find success? Because when your customers and your clients and your the people that you help find success, you're going to find more success for your business too. So we're going to talk all about that next week. Until then, keep pushing forward. Love you guys. I appreciate all of your help and support. And if you have a moment and you haven't done so yet, please head on over to iTunes and leave a review for the show. Just thank you so much for everybody who's left a review. I really appreciate it. It helps out the show. It helps with the rankings, helps get more people's eyeballs, well, ears, I guess, on the show. And again, I want to thank you for all your support. So thank you for that. And I'll see you guys next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at www.smartpassiveincome.com.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you're looking for a new podcast to add to your rotation, I highly recommend Problem Solvers, hosted by Jason Pfeiffer, who's been on the show a few times, actually. As you probably heard in the credits, both our shows are on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. On Problem Solvers, Entrepreneur's editor-in-chief tells the stories of real founders that solved real problems in their businesses, helping listeners get through any obstacles in their own ventures. And each episode is really distinct and easy to follow, and they're bite-sized too, usually around 15 to 20 minutes. And Jason pulls each story out himself so you can avoid the same crippling problems. Matt and I were recently on the show in episode 302, and Jason recently hosted a great episode on whether anyone can be too quote-unquote curious for a traditional career. Listen to Problem Solvers right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.